Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. What do we have on the dock today? Well, more than what took place at the hearing for Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell, that's for sure. Is Ghislaine Maxwell winning her trial in New York? Some people in the courtroom that are watching think she's maybe pulling ahead. Josh Duggar, well, things may not be going as well for him. And then our dumb criminal contestant of the day. It is Thursday, December 2nd, 2021, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. All right, let's get straight to the docket. First, Chad Daybell. Lori Vallow. Well, kind of, she had a hearing. It was at 1 o'clock today, Mountain Time. And what happened? Well, what happened was what happens at most hearings in front of the Honorable Judge Boyce relating to anything regarding Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. A whole lot of nothing. It seemed as though, once again, nobody's really prepared to do anything. A couple of insults are thrown back and forth, and really a whole lot of nothing. Let's talk about that. First, when is there going to be a trial date? Well, basically, Mr. Wood threw out that the government would need at least another year and they'd be ready to try this case sometime in January of 2023. 2023, ladies and gentlemen, another year to get ready. Now, as Mr. Pryor did point out that at one point when Mr. Pryor asked for a waiver of speedy trial and a request for a continuance, the district attorney said that he was ready to go. Which I've said all along, when the state files their indictment, that is their position saying we're ready to go. And if you're going to exercise your speedy trial rights, guess what? The government better be ready to go. Okay? Not happening. Where was Mark Means? Okay? He wasn't on the actual picture. The court made reference that he wasn't there, but maybe there was some reference that he was on the phone. It was very odd. But, you know, he's the one that caused this big brouhaha about statements made by Lori Vallow, brought in issues regarding the state health mental hospital, and basically nothing got held on that matter either, because the court needs to make certain decisions as it relates to can they even have a hearing when Lori Vallow is still not competent? Does she have a right to be present? And can anything really take place in regards to anything related to Lori Vallow since she is incompetent? Well, the judge wants to get the state attorneys on there. So what took place? Well, a whole lot of nothing. We set it out even farther, and everything will be subject to a future scheduling order. The case continues, draws on and on and on. Has anyone ever heard that little saying? A job expands to the amount of time given. I have. Most judges operate under that theory, okay? Set a date, set firm dates, and you better have a real good reason to ask for a continuance. And I just don't get why everyone is so afraid to go try this case. If the government needs to go try it without Lori Vallow sitting next to Chad Daybell, so be it. Go try the case. Give the man his day in court. Do it again if you have to try Lori Vallow, if she's restored to competency. But you can't sit around and wait forever, because guess what? At a certain point when the defendant starts demanding his speedy trial rights and you don't give them to him, they get set free on a speedy trial violation. Think about it. Guys better get going out there, because somebody's going to do that. Now, one thing I do think is worth noting is that Mr. Pryor said that Lori Vallow's attorneys have had some 8 to 10 months now since this case has gone death, and they apparently haven't even started their mitigation work yet. What? What? That's the first thing you do on a death penalty case. Yes, you look at the facts, but you start a parallel investigation regarding mitigation, anything that will take death off the table. And for the attorneys to state that they haven't done anything, they haven't started anything yet, are you kidding me? Judge Boyce, you don't want to be Judge Ito. That's right, Judge Ito of the not-so-famous judge in the O.J. Simpson trial. Get a hold of this situation, Judge. You're looking, well, like you are not in control of your courtroom. And every judge knows there's one thing you have to do. Make sure it's your courtroom. Bottom line. All right. Next on the docket, Ghislaine Maxwell's trial. Here we are, day four. And the question is Ghislaine Maxwell winning the trial? Well, we'll talk about this, but some people that are actually in the courtroom, very familiar with the case, are saying she is winning. And let's talk about why. So the defense attorneys for Ms. Maxwell hit pretty hard against the accusers on cross-examination. Now, the woman, who's only been referred to as Jane, testified that Ms. Maxwell was in the room during a sexual encounter with that man named Jeff when Jane was just 14 years old. Well, Jane also alleged that Maxwell would lead her to the massage table and instruct her on how that man named Jeff preferred to be massaged. Well, during cross-examination, Laura Menninger, that's right, here from Denver, Colorado, smart lady, ladies and gentlemen, a great attorney. She went to Duke undergrad, Stanford Law. She worked at Goldman Sachs prior to becoming a lawyer. Very, very smart woman, great attorney. She is kicking butt, okay? So Laura Menninger repeatedly challenged Jane and her account by contrasting her trial testimony with government reports of her interviews with federal agents and prosecutors between September of 2019 and February of 2020 during the criminal investigation of Ms. Maxwell. Portions of those reports were shown to Jane on the screen in the witness box, but the full reports are not available to the public and haven't been admitted into evidence. And on cross-examination by Ms. Menninger said, "When you spoke to the government, you told them that you did not have any specific memory of the first time with Ms. Ghislaine Maxwell, correct?" She stated, "Yes, you have come up with that memory in the last 2 years." Jane replied that she didn't believe she had come up with a memory. Now, Ms. Menninger then cited a record of February 2020 of an interview in which Menninger showed it to her, that she told the government that the first time you were involved with Ms. Ghislaine Maxwell, there were two other girls there too. And Jane said she did not recall and that the word typed up in the document was incorrect. So Menninger asked if it was a typo by the government. And well, that's right. Jane said, yes. Okay. She went on about, "You testified about a specific incident in New Mexico," Ms. Menninger asked. "Today, you remember it was in 2020, you did not. I don't recall saying any of what's written here," the witness, Jane, replied. Menninger pointed out to Jane three instances where the government investigators asked her if she recalled any specific incidents of abuse during that trip to New Mexico, and she responded that she was not sure. Jane noted that she had not written the document herself, had not seen the report before her testimony, and that her interviews hadn't been recorded. She called some of the information in the report out of sequence or incorrect. Now, Ms. Menninger brought up Jane's career as a television actress for more than 20 years, and Menninger noted that Jane has played roles as a protective mother, the victim of a car crash, a cancer survivor, had been stalked by a serial killer, and portrayed a prostitute. Menninger asked if Jane was able to cry on command. Needless to say, the prosecution didn't like that, and then on redirect, the United States attorney asked whether she understood the difference between acting on TV and testifying in court. And of course, Jane replied, "Yes, acting on TV isn't real. Testifying is. Are you acting here?" "Of course not," Jane replied. Now, Mo asked Jane why she decided to come forward about the alleged abuse now after years of trying to avoid talking about it. And Jane replied that she was happy to find closure. This is something that she's been running from her entire life. And Jane noted that she met with many federal agents and prosecutors over many months, and that it got easier to talk to the government as time went on. That testimony lasted 7 hours over the course of 2 days. Jane rarely displayed any emotion, but as her testimony came out on late Wednesday afternoon, Jane broke down crying when she was asked about the $5 million settlement that she had received from the compensation fund set up for that man named Jeff's victims. Jane said that she wished she'd never received the money in the first place and that she was seeking closure and compensation for all the money that she has spent out of her own pocket trying to make this go away and fix herself. So, which brings me to the next point. As you may recall, the theory of the defense in this particular case was memory, manipulation, and money. You see how that all came out in the cross-examination? Memory. Ladies and gentlemen, your memory does not get better as time goes on. It does not. And it is beautiful, okay, when a defense witness says that the government, who's supposed to be the accurate note taker, gets it wrong and basically says, I didn't say that. Well, guess what? The prosecution's relying on those reports, and observers in the courtroom are wondering if there is enough experience on the prosecution side of the table, because they're very concerned that these witnesses for the government are not prepared. And apparently, methodically, the defense is picking apart their previous, prior, inconsistent statements. And ladies and gentlemen, that goes directly to a witness's ability to recall, recollect what they perceived. It goes directly to their credibility. And those are going to be the instructions that the jury is going to get. So I don't know how this trial is going to come out, but from the people that are in the courtroom, experienced observers are saying that Ms. Ghislaine Maxwell's attorneys, if this was a horse race, Ghislaine Maxwell is pulling ahead. And when you've got a good, simple theory, manipulation, money, and memory, jury's going to remember that, and they're going to pound it, pound it, pound it. How much money did they get? How are they manipulated? By whom? Oh, the attorneys say this, and you can get some more money? And your memory. Ladies and gentlemen, think about it. If you were going to buy a car from somebody and they couldn't tell you the specifics about it, what you did, when you bought it, what you'd say, seems a little fishy. Don't recall. Oh, was it in a terrible accident? Ooh, I don't recall. I don't remember saying it was only driven on Sundays. That's what this is going to come down to. Witness credibility. And I think most people obviously will give the benefit of the doubt to a woman making an allegation or a child making an allegation, but it is another thing to actually prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. I'm telling you, these cases can be very, very hard in some cases, but when you have a litany of inconsistent statements where people are seeking money, the prosecutors maybe should have thought twice. We'll see if the prosecution wins this one. No one will know. Whatever the jury's decision is will be the correct one. But I don't know. I've said this before. United States Attorney's Office doesn't have a very deep bench. And you would think on one of the biggest trials, literally in the Southern District of New York for a long time, that they would put some experienced attorneys on it. Just my humble opinion. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, next on the docket. That's right, Josh Duggar. All right, for those who don't like it, here it comes. Close your ears. Rhymes with hugger. Well, his trial may not be going so well. So opening statements were made the other day regarding the allegations against Mr. Duggar. And the United States attorney basically described for the jury the images that they're going to see in the very graphic titles that were found by detectives when they were monitoring trafficking and trading of these images involving minors. Now, these images were tracked to a peer-to-peer streaming network allegedly used by Mr. Duggar, and some of the children were as young as 7 years old. Now, the United States attorney explained how Duggar's desktop used a Linux partition drive in addition to the usual Windows drive to evade the Covenant Eyes application he had voluntarily placed on his computer. Now, the Covenant Eyes application is supposed to restrict his viewing of certain inappropriate and illegal materials and report those to other individuals. Now, the Covenant Eyes did not work because Duggar allegedly was using this Linux partition drive. Now, Duggar's attorney, Justin Gelfand, shot back in his opening statement saying that Duggar didn't even know how to use computers, couldn't tell you how to create this partition, and it must have been some other culprit. Now, after opening statements, the first witness was called and described how she'd run across a peer-to-peer transfer of a video file that had some 65 images of children. Now, some of the images were shown to the jury, and after initial arguments, a detective testified how she ran across a peer-to-peer transfer of a video file for some 65 images of children. Now, some of the images were shown to the jury, and then a special agent took the stand and highlighted the portions of their investigation, and the defense obviously cross-examined those witnesses. Basically, the defense for Mr. Duggar was suggesting that it was sloppy, too slow police work because they let the real perpetrator have access to Mr. Duggar's computer and that person slipped away. The testimony from prosecutors, they played excerpts from a 51-minute interview Duggar gave to Homeland Security agents while they were sweeping the property. Now, the agent testified that Duggar agreed to waive his Miranda rights, his right to remain silent, and spoke with the agents during the execution of the warrant. Now, the audio, you could hear Duggar was agreeable and responsive, and the agent testified that Duggar spontaneously brought up the nature of the investigation without any prior warning after getting into the agent's truck for this interview. Mr. Duggar turned in his chair, according to the recording and that testimony of the special agent. Mr. Duggar apparently turned in his chair facing several agents and asked, "Is this about somebody downloading child?" Apparently, the defense was incredulous given that it was the only comment not captured on the audio. The special agent said that Duggar spoke right before the agent turned the recorder on. Now, Duggar told the agents he used his device, a phone and a Mac laptop and an HP desktop, about equally for work and for personal needs. He said that his children, his wife, and others had access to his phone and laptop while the guys at work here are the ones that use it for the desktop. Now, the Homeland Security agent testified while discussing all this peer-to-peer stuff. Mr. Duggar mentioned to the Tor browser, which is often used because it masks internet activity. Prosecutors then explained how the Tor browser is often used in connection with the dark web, but Duggar told the agents that he had just used it to upload photos for his business. At this point of the interview, the agents explained why they had really arrived to investigate the allegations of child exploitation. And then Duggar responds, "So is that what you're saying is going on? What is the scope?" Mr. Duggar asked, apparently. "Is something going on my devices?" Now, under cross-examination, the agents testified that why they didn't pursue the case more quickly and investigate more broadly, including the fact that the home where they initially served the Duggar search warrant. The agent said there was a record-keeping error on the part of the internet service provider that initially led them to the wrong address with their warrant. Now, Duggar's attorney contended that they had already narrowed in on Duggar because of his high-profile status, and that's where the probe went, and they didn't look at other people who were actually using the computer. The defense questioned why not the device of the other men connected to the car lot. Why weren't they seized? Why weren't they forensically examined and given up IP addresses that didn't identify with the person at that time? The agent said in one instance, Mr. Duggar's employee, an analyst, did an manual examination at the scene. The agent didn't elaborate. I can tell you what that means is they looked voluntarily at other people's phones and they figured there was nothing there. That's what that meant. Now, obviously, the government has to place Mr. Duggar to the laptop at the dates and times that the images were downloaded. Now, Mr. Duggar not only knew the password, but also display patterns of text messages and photos from his phone on two key dates that place him at the car lot and sometime right next to the desktop around the same time the alleged illegal images were accessed. That is going to be the best defense, but I'm sure Mr. Duggar's employees are not liking the fact that he's basically saying they're the real suspect and must have been doing this. Now, when the images were shown today, Mr. Duggar's wife apparently left the courtroom rather abruptly and would not look at the images. Ladies and gentlemen, let me just tell you this. I think I've mentioned this before. I can eat my lunch looking at autopsy photos. It doesn't bother me, okay? But the only time I ever felt literally ill after an evidence view was when I had to go view images that were alleged basically in a situation like this. And I'm telling you, it is the most disgusting thing you could ever imagine. And the jury is not as desensitized as a criminal defense attorney that's had to deal with those type of cases is going to be absolutely appalled. And if the jury believes that Mr. Duggar was behind that computer and downloaded that information, those images, he is done. That is what it's going to come down to. But a defense of my client's too stupid to download this stuff, listen, if it's important to them, they will find a way. And apparently, allegedly, these images were rather interesting to Mr. Duggar, and the government is alleging that's why he found a way. Obviously, we'll continue to give him the presumption of innocence, that's Mr. Duggar, until and if he is convicted or pleads guilty at trial. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. A motorist who has a Tesla logo tattooed on his face was driving a 1992 minivan when he was arrested Friday. Jordan Lindsay, 25, crashed his maroon GMC Savari minivan that has room for 8 passengers in Illinois in what the court complaint described as a single vehicle rollover accident. Now, Mr. Lindsay was arrested on felony aggravated DUI count because he was driving with a suspended license and because of a previous drunk driving conviction. He was also charged with driving an uninsured vehicle, unregistered vehicle, and failure to reduce speed to avoid a crash. Lindsay may be a Tesla fan, but his main ride was discontinued before Tesla was even founded. All right. And yes, Mr. Lindsay should be our dumb criminal contestant of the day for putting any kind of face tattoo on his face. Okay? Do anywhere else. Just don't put it on the face. Okay? Just a little hint there, Mr. Lindsay. All right. That's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.